arguably the greatest economic comeback in American history.
It's been just under a month since Trump took office, and right now, everyone's wondering one of two things. What happens next, and how did we get here again?
Well, what happened last night?
What has happened to America?
No! I'm still trying to figure out what happened.
Liberals clearly didn't see Trump coming back, and in the aftermath of his victory, while Democrats pinned the blame for their loss on leftists, pro-Palestinian protesters, Latinos, and anyone but themselves, one theme just kept showing up. And that's...
The economy.
So, the general consensus since the election is that if Trump won, it's because the economy was bad and the Democrats didn't listen. You can find this take everywhere from the Washington Post to the New York Times and on CBS, according to whom Trump's voters view the US economy as bad, while most Harris voters view the economy as good. And their poll numbers show that the divide is a lot more dramatic than you might expect. And look, it's not hard to see where this divide is coming from. The Harris campaign pretty much ran on a line of, everything is fine, trust us.
There are lots of signs that the American economy is doing very well.
We now have historic low unemployment in America among all groups of people. We now have an economy that is thriving by all macroeconomic measures.
Compare that to Trump.
We had the strongest economy in history. If Harris wins this election, the result will be a Kamala economic crash.
I know a lot of you are struggling. I know a lot of you are worried about paying the bills. It's gonna stop when Donald Trump brings back common sense to this country.
But who's right? Well, that depends. What is the economy? Is it inflation? Sure. Is it the number of new jobs? Maybe. Unemployment? Grocery store shortages? The stock market? The average hourly wage? All totally valid definitions of the economy. And that means that, in a way, they were both right. The thing about the economy is that it's pretty much just whatever you say it is. And that meant a lot of liberals were baffled that working-class Trump voters couldn't see how well the economy was doing. We saw a lot of people condescendingly point out that wages on the low end rose faster under Biden and inflation was under control towards the end at a regular 2-ish percent. But maybe the most infuriating thing we've seen coming out of this post-election econ snark has been this idea that Biden left things better than when he came in, and people shouldn't be upset because America's been experiencing GDP growth way stronger than other countries.
I've heard many of my Republican and Democratic friends say that China is on the rise and America's falling behind. They've got it backwards. America's rising. We have the best economy in the world. And since I've come to office, our GDP is up, our trade deficit with China is down to the lowest point in over a decade.
The thing is, though, those at the bottom are still only making a punishing $28,000 a year, with a lot of states still way under the now mostly irrelevant $15 minimum wage we've been trying to get for over a decade. And yes, it's true that under Biden, inflation has stopped for a lot of goods, but those higher prices didn't disappear. There's a huge problem in the way we talk about the economy. Not only is it always a vague term, this one number, GDP, which has become a universal standard for how well an economy is doing, tells us absolutely nothing about how you and I actually live. Actually, it's worse than that. All this attention paid to the economy and macroeconomic indicators like GDP actively makes it seem like what's best for you and me just happens to coincide with what's best for Wall Street and your boss. And that's just not true. But we should back up for a second. Hey everyone, just wanted to stop by and offer a quick thank you to all of our Patreon supporters. We really could not do this channel without you. So big thank you to you guys. If you'd like to support the channel and you're not yet a Patreon member, you can check it out at patreon.com/secondthought. where we've got some excellent perks for you guys, including access to our Discord server, where we have a book club and a dedicated educator role ready to answer any questions you might have about socialism. All right, on to the video. The first thing you need to know is that the idea of the economy is only about 100 years old. It's only in the 1930s, in this book, that we first get the word economy showing up the way we mean it now. The word itself is much older, of course. It comes from the ancient Greeks. But it's Keynes who first theorized the economy as this complicated network of monetary transactions we understand it as now. He is the guy to thank slash blame for the fact that we all intuitively imagine a separate thing from politics and society that we call the economy. That is, in theory, the sum of all the moments at which money changes hands.
Show me the money!
Keynes's General Theory was a truly transformative book for economics and politics. But his ideas would have been immediately forgotten if there was no way to make them useful. And to do that, you needed a way to measure this economy he was talking about. Enter GDP, or as it was called back then, GNP, the gross national product. It's a metric invented by these guys that tries to measure the final value of all the goods and services in a country. It's a bit more complicated than that, but that's the point of the rest of the video, so, you know, chill out. But when we hear people talk about the economy, capital T, capital E, doing well, usually they mean that GDP is going up. In fact, getting this number to go up is the explicit mission of a lot of government projects, and if anything is expected to make the number go down, you can be pretty confident it won't make it past Congress. The EU, for example, both in 1997 and 2012, made it so that all the member countries are constitutionally forced to respect specific ratios between their GDP and their public deficit and sovereign debt. Likewise, in the US, tax cuts, like those we saw under Bush, were brought in on the justification that they'd increase GDP. And on the Department of Commerce's website, the government is explicit about how important this number is for all sorts of policies and departments. GDP growth is king when it comes to the economy. But there's a lot wrong with chasing GDP growth. For one thing, and stay with me here, growth isn't real. Remember the 1930s? If any of you actually do remember the 1930s, I will be very impressed.
Banks by the hundreds, by the thousands are forced to close. The whole financial system quakes and totters.
Right as Keynes and Kuznets were developing the economy and GDP, two important things were happening. One, the US had just gone through the brutal Great Depression, and the New Deal was kicking in to fix the mess. Two, oil was discovered in East Texas and Iraq, becoming this magic resource that seemed to deliver tons of new, seemingly limitless energy. On the New Deal side, the government needed a way to track what was going on in society, all these inputs and outputs, to predict what the impact of all its new policies were going to be on the suddenly very visible issues of unemployment and future tax revenue. On the oil side, new oil fields were being discovered at such an insane pace that, right as tracking economic indicators became important, it stopped making sense to track the possibility of the things that fueled growth ever running out. With how much was being found, it just sort of seemed like you could consume oil infinitely and, for the most part, ignore how much it might cost to replace it. And this mattered because oil did so much.
This land is so saturated with oil that you can literally wring it out with your finger.
Not only was oil powering American cars and all the infrastructure built around them, the mid-20th century fossil boom gave us
plastics,
which you could use to make pretty much anything, and synthetic fertilizers, which pretty much meant unlimited food. Basically, this one thing, oil, had solved government in the immediate aftermath of the greatest economic tragedy the country had seen.
With their gushing oil wells in super hotels and count up their money all day.
The numbers kept growing thanks to this magical liquid, which had negligible assumed costs, and they could keep growing forever because it seemed like there was always more waiting to be found. Coal had reached its peak, there was no more west to expand on. But thanks to oil, you could reasonably claim that things were just getting better for everyone because oil killed the idea that humans had to compromise with natural limits. Not in energy, not in food, not in stuff. And to back it up, you now had a number that grew every year and was expected to keep growing forever, calculating how much better off everyone was from the year before. So why is growth not real then, beyond just the fantasy of limitless energy? GDP is a static measure. It's like taking a picture of everything that people are spending money on at a moment in time and calculating how much it's worth. To get growth, you need something to compare that picture to. Another picture, taken later. Take your apartment, for example. Every year, your landlord hikes rent a couple percent. Your apartment hasn't changed, it hasn't gotten that, let's say, 5% better, but now it costs more. Thanks to that, the picture from last year and the picture from right now look different. Economists call that growth. Same story, for example, if you got slapped with a medical bill you can't afford. The debt you take out to pay it back, that's growth too. GDP went up, so now everyone gets to pat themselves on the back because, look, the economy is thriving. There is no possible other way to interpret that. See, the way GDP works assumes that any increase in how much money people spend can be interpreted as an improvement. In order to imagine that, you need to delude yourself into thinking that people only spend money on things they want to, have total freedom to pay the price they think is fair for the things they buy, and that anything of value can or should be able to be bought. And if your goal is to make that GDP number grow, you need to delude yourself even further into thinking there is no limit to this, that the oil will never run out, that the forests will never be gone, and that there'll always be more people ready to slave away and produce more shareholder value. Because cutting a tree down to sell the wood makes the number go up, but growing a tree doesn't. The problem is that none of those assumptions hold. Under capitalism, the price of something has nothing to do with how much it's worth to you, and everything to do with how much you can be made to pay for it. Like, okay, think of it like this. I love taking walks after lunch. It doesn't cost me anything, and it would make a lot more economic sense if somebody charged me every time I wanted to. But until my shoes are paywalled and the park installs a turnstile, that daily improvement in the quality of my life isn't going to show up anywhere in any economist's GDP calculation. And it shouldn't. But that's a matter of opinion. When Kuznets developed GNP, it brought up a lot of difficult questions just like that. Questions like, should casino revenues be included in the total? The answer was, yes, by the way, that's a business making the economy grow. Obviously. So, should we also include the money made from illegal gambling? Well, no, it's illegal. Obviously that shouldn't count, right? What about advertising? What about stock trading? What about the military? Kuznets was adamant that military spending was, quote, at best a necessary evil, but still an evil. It was a cost, and he strongly believed that it shouldn't be counted on the side of growth. But that wasn't too popular of an idea for the US government, increasingly infiltrated by the defense industry and getting ready to launch into World War II and spend a lot more on guns. If military spending was counted against GDP growth, that could be a reason to limit it and to really consider all the different costs of this technology we've developed to vaporize people around the world. But if it was just another thing making the economy grow, which at that point we all agree is what's best for everyone, why would we ever deprive ourselves of obliterating a couple million brown kids who don't even live here? Or take healthcare for a second. Cuba's healthcare system delivers identical, if not better, results than what we have in the US on all sorts of key indicators. Cuba has a lower child mortality rate, similar life expectancy, and is regularly able to send doctors abroad to help with epidemics and crises, all within the context of a 60-year American embargo that every country in the world except the US and Israel has voted to end multiple times. Cuba's healthcare system is not organized like it is here. It costs way less to achieve similar and often even better results. But because all this costs less, Cuban GDP suffers. Expensive and inefficient counts as growth for the US, cheap and effective counts against Cuba. So, why care? Why does everyone seem to use GDP if it's such a flawed measure? Well, for a while, they didn't. The Soviet Union, for example, used what it called the material product system that relied more heavily on the physical quantity of goods. Other countries, though, were often forced to adopt GDP through the IMF and World Bank, who set growth targets in GDP terms in exchange for access to loans and international goods. So eventually, GDP is what almost everyone started using. GDP, mind you. What Kuznets originally developed was GNP, the gross national product. The metric everyone uses now is the gross domestic product. That's because GNP is calculated by following the nationals of a given country, regardless of where they are. But GDP is explicitly territorial. Part of the reason behind the change from GNP to GDP that happened in the 1990s, right as everyone is turning on their economic calculators, is that it effectively hid how dramatically exploitative globalization was for some countries. Instead of following where the profits ended up, usually in the hands of Western CEOs and shareholders, a lot of countries seemed like they were suddenly developing and growing at a crazy rate, even though they weren't the ones keeping the money, because GDP focuses on where the money is made, not who gets it. But more than any of these other reasons, though, the staying power of GDP comes from the way it lies about politics. It makes politics seem like we're all in this together, and all we need is a good technocrat who'll run the economy like a business and make it grow. If growth is an objective goal that we can measure empirically, we just need to find the perfect levers to pull, and that way we automatically squash any debate with an objective answer. So if people believe that growth is good no matter what, in the words of the Federal Reserve System Governor Henry Wallach, then quote, "growth is a substitute for a quality of income. So long as there is growth, there is hope, and that makes large income differentials tolerable." If you can sell people on the idea that growth benefits everyone, even though it doesn't, you can kill class politics. All GDP is a measure of prices, the prices of commodified goods and services. Growth is only ever an increase in commodification and commodity production. Like, if we made iPhones with batteries that could last twice as long, GDP would go down. If we took healthcare and education and made them public services, affordable and universal, GDP would go down. If you were less exploited by your boss, GDP would go down. Your life would be better even if the economy stopped growing. But when all these different politicians use the economy as a shortcut to get your vote, telling you how much growth they've achieved or they're going to bring, you can be confident that it isn't your approval that they're after. They want growth because all growth means is more of your life being decided by someone else's profit. It's more turnstiles at the park, more iPhones in the landfill, more oil being extracted. It's a 100-year-old lie based on myths we've long debunked, and neither party is interested in being honest about it.